This coming Wednesday, the 4th of April, is the 50th anniversary of the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Easter Sunday was 10 days later. The poet Mae Sarton, a white American woman, wrote a poem entitled Easter, 1968. Here's part of it. Now we have buried the face we never knew. Now we have silenced the voice we never heard. Now he is dead, we look on him with awe. Dead king, dear martyr, and anointed word. Where thousands followed, each must go home into his secret heart and learn the pain. Stand there on rock and utterly alone, come to terms with this burning, suffering man. Head of an African, vital and young, the full lips fervent as an open rose, the high-domed forehead full of light and strong. Look on this man again. The blood still flows. Listen once more to the impassioned voice till we are lifted on his golden throat and trumpet call of agony and choice. Out of our hesitating shame and doubt. Remember how he prayed before the task. Remember how he walked, eyes bright and still. Unarmed, his face, his bronze face shining like a mask. Through stones and curses, hatred hard as hail. Now we have silenced the voice we never heard. Break open, heart, and listen to his word. For centuries, the holiday of Easter has been marked as a time of hope, joy, rebirth, and renewal. It is marked as a celebration. Yet Easter of 1968 was a time of grief and fear in this country. Remember or imagine the shock, pain, and anger. Remember or imagine the sense of lost momentum for the civil rights movement, the loss of direction. How to move forward in hope. 50 years later, the time in which we are living now feels also like one of despair, dread, and pain. Our time is marked by a pattern of destruction, destruction of natural environments and human bodies. Recent weeks have seen the 70th killing of a person of color at the hands of law enforcement in this country during this year. Here in Sacramento, Stephon Clark, black and unarmed, was shot by two police officers in his grandmother's backyard. One bullet entered the front of his body, but seven more went into his back. The bright smile of a 22-year-old is gone. Stephon won't be learning, working, or watching his children grow up. He won't be having Easter dinner at his grandmother's table. In Parkland, Florida, a violent young white man has added to this nation's toll of school shootings with a semi-automatic assault weapon that he had obtained legally. The bright smiles of 17 teachers and students won't be seen at any holiday table where any of them would normally celebrate with family and friends this year or in any year going forward. Of course, while speaking about violence, I want to mention the damage now being done to the institutions of democracy and civic life in this nation's capital. From the top office in this land comes an attitude of arrogance, dishonesty, greed, and cruelty that boggles the mind. Furthermore, not only in this country, but around the world, there is wide rejection of the plight of refugee families fleeing war, human rights abuses, and starvation. So it feels a bit foolish to offer up a sense of hope or to claim to have it on this Easter. Perhaps it's an unfair joke for April Fool's Day and Easter to happen on the same day in this year. Hoping for better things? expecting to find more human kindness and peace among people? April Fools. Nevertheless, we have a choice of whether to keep going forward or whether to remain still and quiet in our grief, to remain hesitating in our fear, our discomfort, our confusion. In this moment, it seems clear that we are being called forward. But how to move? Where to move? Perhaps we should look at the ways already marked by others, the ways led by others. Perhaps we follow companions along the way for support, accountability, and encouragement. Much of the progress human societies have made is a result of solidarity, of not going it alone. Yet even for those who were wise enough to find companions on the way, there was not often a clear way forward. There was no guidebook, no path or map charted by others. On this question, Antonio Machado, a great Spanish poet of the early 20th century, wrote these words in a poem. I'll read the Spanish first. Caminante, no hay camino. Se hace camino al andar. Traveler, there is no path. You make the path by going on it. Traveler, there is no path. You make the path by going on it. Typically, I am a person who wants to know where my path is headed before I set out on it, before I make a choice. A dithering decision maker sometimes. Rarely have I made big changes without some fallback position in mind. Coming out of the closet as a gay person was perhaps the single biggest step for me with no fallback position. As a young adult in the 1980s, I would be making the path by going on it. I did worry about what I could not see, yet I was fortunate. Once I began the path, I found the support of others who already had been making a path forward in their own lives as LGBT people or as allies wanting to learn and wanting to walk the path alongside of me. Only by connecting with others did I realize how isolation and silence had oppressed me. Even though I had started without a feeling of hope, there was just enough of it in me to begin making the path as I went. Most of the progress in human rights in this nation and in the world has been made by people making the path as they go. In the civil rights movement, people of color put their lives on the line because under the systems of this nation, their lives already were on the line. They trained one another how to wage economic boycotts. They practiced how to conduct actions of nonviolent resistance. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was the most notable of the leaders of that progress. He wasn't the only one, and his words alone would have meant little if there were not people on the path with him, shaping their hope in the form of courage and persistence and love. Dr. King's assassination was a brutal setback for the movement. For so many people, the pain and confusion were nearly unbearable. Yet even in those early days of trauma, there was the imprint of Dr. King's presence and his vision of a better future. And even without him, there was the path which people had been making. They made the path by going on it with courage and with faith and with encouragement from one another's presence. You can read hints of this in May Sarton's poem about his death. Look on this man again. The blood still flows. Listen once more to the impassioned voice till we are lifted on his golden throat and trumpet call of agony and choice out of our hesitating shame and doubt. Lifted out of our hesitating shame and doubt. To the brokenhearted, the poet said, keep vivid the memory of his presence and power. If we still hear that impassioned voice, it will be as if he had never left us. The poet was urging us not to lose the meaning of the work that he had led and the progress the nation had accomplished. The choice is ours whether to go forward. The choice always has been whether to suffer with our broken hearts all alone or whether to join hands and make the path by going on the path. Let's consider the first Easter in history, which took place in the Roman Empire's province of Palestine. Jesus of Nazareth was the son of a Jewish carpenter, yet he formed his own path. He became a traveling holy man, making disciples for a strange ministry. He and his followers went about healing the sick, curing spiritual afflictions, and raising those who were dead, or seemed to be. His disciples didn't know what they were getting into. The New Testament quotes more than a few moments of doubt expressed by his followers. "Teacher, we didn't know. Teacher, we were afraid. Oh," he scolded them, "ye of little faith." Yet the New Testament Gospels give evidence of Jesus having his own moments of doubt and worry. Early in his ministry, he went into the wilderness, a long time alone, facing spiritual struggles about the way to go forward. And then he came out and went forward. Once he set out on the path, he did not hesitate. Jesus broke social barriers between people, such as barriers in his day between unrelated men and women, between Jews and Samaritans, and between poor peasants and their antagonists, like tax collectors and Roman military police officers. By parables and questions and his presence, he taught about God's purpose for all people to regard one another as family. He preached for us to put down our grudges and let down our guard with one another. However, some of his preaching brought him to the attention of imperial authorities. To preach that God was above all human authority was to deny the Roman emperor's claim to divine status. To challenge the socially constructed barriers of his time, like the barriers between ethnicities, religions, genders, or social classes, was to challenge the basis by which an empire controlled its people. The message of Jesus was a radical one over 2,000 years ago. Of course, it remains a radical message, as we still have all those barriers to separate us. We still have all those justifications for the lack of equity, fairness, and justice in human relations. All the same good excuses to be unwelcoming to those we don't know and unkind to one another. By the way he embodied his radical views, Jesus inspired more people to join his team of justice, love, and healing. More people to make the path as they went on the path together. That movement grew and its message grew till it seemed to be a threat to the powers that be. The Romans executed Jesus in a public way, intentionally designed to keep the people terrified and terrorized. Not only was his crucifixion a cruel and unbelievable experience, it was a setback for the movement which he'd led. To many of his followers, it must have seemed foolish ever to have been hopeful in the first place, ever to have been inspired to set out on the path with him. They were devastated and grieving, stumbling around in confusion and misery. Yet they couldn't forget the love he'd shown them or the justice he'd preached about. They couldn't let go of the vision he'd cast for them about peace among all people. And they couldn't shake the sense that he was still in their midst, that he was on the path with them, as they made the path by walking. It is a paradox that we must keep a vision strong and clear even when we can't see it happening yet. The Buddhist writer Mark Nepo says, "When feeling misery and hurt, we must look wider than what hurts. Look beyond what hurts. We must look beyond even if we can't see anything yet. We have to make the path as we go on the path." Writing about kindness, Nepo says that the reward of kindness is joy. He doesn't mean that happiness is owed to us if we are kind. Joy is not a prize we deserve by our efforts at kindness. He means that the action of kindness produces joy as a sense of well-being. Perhaps the same thing applies to hope. The reward for acting with courage and love is a sense of hope. The reward for moving forward on the path with courage and persistence is that as you go along the way, you might find and see signs of hope. Moreover, you might reveal signs of hope to other people just by being present with them along the way. The journeys taken by the followers of Jesus or the members of the civil rights movement have given us a way to think about the demands of the grieving people in and beyond Sacramento to the killing of Stephon Clark, and the demands of grieving people in and beyond Florida to the killings in Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Consider the students who launched the March for Our Lives in Parkland and the ones who marched in solidarity all over this land. The massive walkouts, silent vigils, and eloquent protests won't raise the dead. They won't return the future taken from every one of the victims. Yet their actions have made an impact. They have perhaps set in motion a renewal of hope, hope that we can reduce the number of school children lost to gun violence in the years to come. They have shown that even in the middle of grief and pain, we can still move forward, we can still reach out. We can reach out to others asking for help and offering help. We can claim the right to tell our story. We can shine a light on denial and falsehoods. Together, we can face down those who would want us to back down into grieving quietly in our corner and giving up. Those children in the March for Our Lives wanted to speak up and to speak out. They have called for gun safety and sensible gun laws. Yet by their courage, they also have inspired so many of us who are not children. They have made us want to help them and follow them, made us want to embody hope in our own communities, in our own struggles, in our own ways. They have embodied hope. They have given shape to it. The work of shaping hope may not feel like hope. The work of shaping hope won't feel clear or comforting, comfortable or convenient. Shaping hope has rarely ever been convenient or clear, and people doing it won't feel comfortable. I think this is the message of Easter, that it is not foolish to hope for a better day. It is not foolish to put your values on the line or your love. By putting your love on the line, by putting our love on the line together, we can find our courage together. And by acting with courage, we give shape to hope, and we give signs for hope to one another. It is worth putting one step in front of the other. It is worth making the path as you go and not going it alone. So may it be. Blessed be.